I did some Go and I liked it.
Golang?
Yeah, Golang.
Another language you're adding to your portfolio of developer skills.
Well, let's not over-egg it. The backstory is, for a long while, I have been wanting to be able to scan snap packages, remember them, for vulnerabilities. And so, you know, we know a snap is a bundle of software, right? And sometimes people don't update them. And it would be really good if you could scan them and see what's inside, what libraries are in there, figure out what versions there are, make sure there's no CVEs, all that kind of stuff. That would be a good thing. And so I've wanted to be able to do this for a while. And now working at Anchor, we have tools that can do that, but couldn't do it to snaps. They could do the scanning and vulnerability scanning, but they couldn't do it to snaps. And that's the problem I wanted to solve.
Okay, I'm curious, because snaps at the end of the day are much like Docker images. You know, it's a lot of the same technology that's in use. So what's fundamentally different that means you couldn't scan a snap when you could scan a Docker image?
Well, the tools that we have, Sift and Gripe and Grant, are all built to scan OCI containers. Mm-hmm. And snaps are not OCI containers. Ah. They're SquashFS files. And so they're just not the same thing. It's like saying pkzip can undo zip files. Why can't it undo arg files?
Right.
I'm throwing my age out there with arg.
I was banking on you saying raw files there, but never mind.
Yeah, sorry about that. Same thing. And so the problem is you just couldn't. Now, you can unsquash a SquashFS file, a snap, and scan the resulting file system, but that's not great, and it doesn't jive with the experience of scanning a container. When you want to scan a container, you just point it at a container and it just pulls the container down and scans it, right? And I wanted that kind of experience. Well, there was an opportunity because we recently partnered with Canonical. And as part of that partnership, we had meetings with people on their security team to like talk about, you know, the security tool landscape and all that kind of stuff. And they said, hey, it would be really good if Sift could do scanning and generate an SBOM of all the things that are inside the various packaging formats that Canonical have, Snap being one of them. And Alex Goodman, who works on the Sift team, did that piece of work. He made it so that you could run Sift and then like Firefox at stable, and Sift would go to the Snap store, pull down the Firefox snap from the stable channel, and then peer inside it and tell you what's in there. And that was quite a challenge because one of the things about snaps is they're compressed, which is good. But one of the things about them is they're compressed with different algorithms, and not all compression algorithms are the same.
Yes, because I remember stuff coming out about this with people talking about the sizes of snaps and then, but you can use a more efficient algorithm which actually makes it smaller.
Hmm.
So you might have one which is published recently which is using, I don't know, Z Standard, and an old one which is using GZIP or something.
Z Standard and LZO.
Oh, there we go.
Are the main ones, but yeah. And the problem is, for us, that Sift is Apache licensed.
Uh-oh.
And the compression tools for unpacking the snaps are not in a compatible license. So Alex had to write his own implementation of the LZO wow. decompression, which was fun in and of itself. Yeah, he's a smart guy. And he's currently on vacation and he completely deserved it. Anyway, he did that initial implementation that would like catalog what's inside a snap. But what we didn't do is take account of all the different YAML files that get bundled inside a snap that detail what's in there in a structured way, rather than us just like doing a directory listing and traverse all the files. And so the next time we had a meeting with Canonical, they were like, hey, that's great. Now can you understand all these YAML files? And there's lots of different YAML files and you need to understand them. And so that's the bit I was looking at, is understanding the structure of these YAML files so that we can read them, understand what packages were built into the snap or the snap was built with, and then we can report on that.
So how much of the full picture do those files give you? Do they literally tell you everything, or do they tell you, here are the things that were specified and then there were some other things which were probably pulled in like as dependencies or whatever?
It depends.
Right.
Because it depends how the snap was built.
Right.
Because some snaps are built in such a way that they don't actually have the manifest file
okay.
at all. Because you can just literally squash a directory up, mm-hmm. and that's a snap.
Okay.
So long as there's one YAML file, snap.yaml, that's the minimum viable snap is, and you can see that if you download my null snap I made for lols in the past, it literally has one file in it, and it's the snap.yaml. So yeah, it can be a bit of a challenge, but if people use Snapcraft and they use Launchpad and, you know, they use the standard tools, and Canonical do for all of their stuff. So
that's reassuring.
They're customer number one for this. So we should be all right. But it was quite interesting seeing the difference when you look at the metadata and when you don't, because Sift is pretty good at looking at a directory listing and seeing a bunch of libraries and going, yeah, I can pretty much figure out what those are. It does a bit of guesswork. But now, giving it the metadata that was baked into the snap at the time when the snap was built means we can be a lot more accurate and a lot more precise about exactly what's inside the snap. And that's what everyone wants, because you want the precision of saying it's this package, this version, and probably came from this version of the Ubuntu repository or, you know, wherever it came from. And my change hasn't landed as we write this. One of my colleagues is having to help me a little bit. But I got the thing started. I got the process started. And it was quite rewarding, because my little prototype, I was able to point it at any old snap from the store, and I could see the difference. Without the patches that I'd done, it would show literally everything as maybe a Python package. Like, it looked like it was something from pip.
Yeah.
When in fact, it was a deb that had Python packages inside it that had been put inside the snap. And so it was basically misidentifying some of the packages. And what we really want is none of that misidentification. We want to be confident and say, these are the packages that are in there, because then we can pass that to Gripe, and Gripe can say, okay, that package is vulnerable to this CVE or that CVE. And that's the ultimate goal you want to get to, is being able to point Gripe or any other scanner at an SBOM generated by Sift from a snap and say, it is clean or it is not clean. And that's ultimately what Canonical want, because they want to have a capability for their customers to be able to use vulnerability scanners to have the confidence that there are no vulnerabilities in the software that they're either packaging or using. It was quite interesting to me, because as far as I'm concerned, Sift has always been about container scanning, but the development work that I did on Sift was quite small. And it's really just, you know, introspecting a YAML file and picking out the package names and the versions and the architectures, and then representing that in an SBOM, which is just another document. So it's really just reading a document and converting it into another format and writing the document out. And most of the reading and the writing bit was already written by somebody else. All I had to do was just interpret it a little bit. But it was quite rewarding to get to a stage where it actually worked.
I have been using macOS for 90 days, and you'll never guess what happened next.
Did you install Nix?
I did that on day one. So I started my new job. Well, as we record this, it's more than 90 days, but I started my job 90 days ago. And when I was going through the new hire process, I was given a choice of computing devices, and I opted for a MacBook.
Why did you do that? Why would you do that?
Total seduction by battery endurance of the Apple Silicon MacBook. Because
yeah, that would do it.
When I'm traveling, I don't want to be suffering with battery anxiety as I'm doing things, and the MacBooks just run and run and run. So that was the pivotal feature that made me choose a Mac. And to Mark's point, did I install Nix? Yes, that was the second feature, which is because Nix can run on any Linux and macOS, I could just take my configuration with me and bring all of my tooling over to macOS. So I thought, this is going to be fine. I will just be able to drop my stuff in on a Mac, and I'll happily use a Mac. That was where I started from.
So there's this dog emoji or gif of flames around you, and this is fine. I'm feeling like you're not happy with this.
No, I'm deeply unhappy with this after 90 days. It's really difficult to sort of describe this, but there are enough differences between, oh, there's so many things. Right, let's start with, first of all, like a Linux user space experience on macOS, right? So let's forget about the macOS user interface. Let's just talk about you're in a terminal, what tooling is available to you? Well, as we've touched on, thanks to Nix, I have the same tooling configured in the same way on macOS that I do on Linux. So if I'm in a terminal, all the same stuff is available. Everything's configured in the same way. I'm a very happy boy. But the problem is the user interface is not the curated desktop experience that I have for myself on my Linux machine. So everything about using the macOS front end is uncomfortable, unfamiliar, slows me down. Like, have you ever tried to take a screenshot on a Mac and remember the key combination for doing that? And why is it so bizarre? And why can I never remember it?
Yeah, it's Command Shift 5. How do you not know that?
I do know it now, and it's rubbish.
I can understand if you're in a heterogeneous environment where you have two machines and you spend 8 hours of your day on one platform,
right,
and 8 hours of your day on the other platform and the other 8 hours sleeping, mm-hmm, then yeah, I can see switching between them is super frustrating. If you get one and that's your only machine, then you probably don't experience this. But because you toggle between two different platforms, that's the gotcha, isn't it?
And I think this is you bringing the hammer to the head of the nail right there, is that I do use my Linux machines as much as I use the Mac. And I've got muscle memory built up over many years of using the Linux stuff. And you can do things to configure the Mac, but it's just the user interface is just different. Just switching between applications, copying, pasting information, bringing windows into foreground. I don't do the stacking window thing anymore. I use tiling window managers. It keeps my fingers on the keyboard. I don't swipe to change workspaces. I have quick hotkeys to move between the 8 workspaces that I routinely use. And I know which applications are going to be in which spots on those windows. And when I'm on a Mac, suddenly I'm like a toddler trying to learn how to tie shoelaces.
So in the corporate environments I've been in over the years, there's usually a period of time after you get your company laptop that you can then request a new one. Mm-hmm. It's like a couple of years or 3 years or something like that. And you're saying 90 days passed. How did this go down? And when are you leaving that place of business? And what's your next job? They hand you your P45 straight away.
It's interesting. So we have two new people in the UK doing IT support.
That's convenient.
And they started about the same time I did. So I got friendly with them. And Andy is one of them. And we were having a backwards and forwards chat about stuff when I was quite new. And in amongst that, he'd just received the framework laptop, which is one of the options that you can have at ChainGuard. Ah,
the correct option.
Yeah. And he was saying, yeah, I've got this and I'm just setting it up and, you know, I'm interested to see how it goes. And I said, oh, interesting. My friend from my podcast that I do has just got his framework and you might want to have a listen to this episode. So after he listened to that, he came back to me and said, you did know that there are Linux devices available when you joined, right? You didn't have to choose a Mac. And I was like, yeah, battery endurance, it will be fine. Something, something, Nix. It'll all be lovely. So, the other day, I've just come back from working in Chicago for a week. So, purely on the Mac for everything. And it just occurred to me, this is slowing me down. I am simply not as productive using this computer than if it was a Linux computer that I have configured to my liking, the way that I just do things.
You say you've just got back from Chicago working. I've only seen one photograph from that event and you were holding a beer in a bar. So just saying.
The person that took that photograph is Will from Late Night Linux. And he works at ChainGuard as well. And when we got back, I said, I think I've made terrible life choices. How frowned upon will it be if I say, I really don't like this MacBook. Could I please have something that runs Linux? And Will's explained, other people have been through this before, it will probably be fine. So I went back to my friend Andy in IT, and I highlighted the one line where he said, "You do realize that other devices are available that run Linux." And I quoted that and I said, "About this, 90 days later, I have made terrible choices. What can I do?" So he's pulled some strings, and in a few weeks, I will be receiving a Framework 16, and I will be able to return my nearly new MacBook for somebody who joins the company that really does want a MacBook, and I'm sure will make good use of it, because there's nothing wrong with a MacBook. Like, the hardware is lovely, the screen is great, the keyboard's outstanding, the operating system is fine. Like, if I wasn't moving between Linux and Mac OS, I could be quite happy. If Mac OS was my only machine, that'd be fine. And maybe if I took the plunge at home and I replaced my PCs running Linux with Mac Minis or something, and I just ran Mac everywhere, I would have the time to invest in learning all of the ecosystem of tooling that's available for Mac, because I know there are community-made tiling window managers and stuff like that, but I just don't have time.
And you'd have to find a new podcast.
Well, there is that, right? Because, yeah, there is that. So, thankfully, yeah, I will be gainfully employed at Linux Matters, because I shall be doing more Linux than I have been for the last 90 days.
I've been adding a new service to my constellation of self-hosted services.
Oh, Constellation, get you.
You've changed.
I've discussed before that I run a Nextcloud server, and one of the things that lets us do is when we take a photo on our phone, it will do an instant upload of our photos to our server, so we don't lose anything, and we can go through every few months and sort of get rid of all the cruft that we don't want and keep the good stuff.
Can I ask, if you have a similar clause to our family, which is if you lose any family photographs, there will be sort of, you know, disputes and
consequences.
Yes. Consequences, yes.
I think it's implied, yes.
Right, okay.
The few times things haven't been syncing properly, I have been dutifully informed and made to fix it.
Okay, so this is a P0.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, this works well pretty much most of the time. The trouble is, Nextcloud isn't good if you want to go back and look at your big archive of photos. It's you're doing it in the app, it's very slow. It doesn't have thumbnails pre-generated, so you sort of try to go to where you think a photo is and you just see a load of loading like placeholders, and it's not a good experience. So I went looking for something else which is good at managing photos, and the new hotness at the time was Image.
Ah, yes.
So I'd seen lots of people talking about this, and particularly how good it is at using machine learning to look at your photos and do all of the indexing stuff for you. So I set this up in a Docker container alongside all of my other Docker stuff, and I mounted the directory where Nextcloud stores its photos on that container and pointed Image at that. So you can tell it, you know, you're managing the photos, but you can also say, use this external library and just index it. They do actually make it quite explicit that in the documentation at the moment that they don't recommend you use it as the only place that you store your photos because it's, quote, experimental.
Okay, so let me just get this clear. The way that you're using it is it has sight of the photographs you've taken, and it purely generates the interesting information from those photographs rather than being the photo management tool.
Exactly. So it generates thumbnails, and it does all the analysis and indexes them and then presents them.
Is there a bug filed in Nextcloud? And is this a known flaw or like missing feature that it can't deal with large collections of photos and do the thumbnailing? Or is it just they don't plan to, it's not going to fix? Or did you not look at that and you just moved to something else?
I didn't really look into it, to be honest. I figured it's been around long enough that if that was going to be a thing, it would be a thing by now. So yeah, one interesting point about this is that because I'm running Nextcloud in a snap, I had to do some snap abuse, I'm going to call it, to allow Image to get at the files that Nextcloud writes, because the way that it sets up permissions to sort of the data directories for snaps, they are not expecting anything else from outside the snap to be poking around and trying to see what's in there. And in fact, if you try and change the permissions, they'll often just change it back.
Mm. Am I guessing that the abuse you're referring to begins with mount and ends in bind?
Is that what I did? No, I think I managed to find something I could do with permissions. I had to find the exact point in the hierarchy where I had to set some permissions and do some umask rules, I think, and something.
All right, okay, you really went for it.
Yeah, then that allowed me to mount that directory on the Docker container and then say image, oh, well, down these levels, that's where your photos are. And that works, okay. So once you've done all this, it then has a secondary container that runs alongside the sort of web app, which is where all the machine learning stuff happens. So that spins away in the background and chews through all of your files. And it does things like face recognition. So it will pick up the people it reckons are in each photo, or at least the faces. It doesn't know them. It's not like Facebook, where it knows everything about everybody as well. It's just, here are the faces I've seen, and you can put names against them, or you can just recognize them yourself and say, oh yes, that's the person who I want to see photos of.
That's very interesting. I've experimented with image a little bit, and I know that my computing environment is very different from yours, because you're running on a low-powered repurposed Optiplex or something like that. So how did that whole AI ML image recognition work on your server?
Pretty well. I mean, with the first big import, it takes a while, but then afterwards it's just ticking along in the background and not doing very much.
When you say takes a while, do you have a broad idea how long and how many photos?
It might have been about a day. I mean, I've got probably, I don't know how many photos. I haven't prepared these statistics.
No, okay.
I've always found it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, I don't care. It's running in the background. I don't care when it decided that that photo had a picture of my daughter in.
Mm.
At some point, I want it to,
mm.
but I don't care when.
Yeah.
And I've never been in a hurry to do that. But yeah, I can see how, you know, if it was weeks or a month, then you might
right.
be more interested, yeah.
Indeed. Yeah. Like, if it's a day, it's fine. I was really asking the question because I'm surprised it did it at all.
Yes, I was. The thing is, I knew this because I'd seen other nerds like me who are doing self-hosting on a Wise 2040 running image, saying, oh, look, it's indexing all of my things. I wonder how long this is going to take. And then a couple of days later, oh, it's all okay now. So so I was already prepared that it was going to work eventually.
I feel like facial recognition is not as hard as object recognition.
Mm.
Like, you know, search for a blue car, search for a, you know, like Apple Photos is able to tell the difference between all of the cats we've ever had, and they're all black and white, right? So I think that's pretty clever. Whereas just being able to determine the difference between me and Claire is probably not that hard.
So one thing that's interesting is I went to Paris about a month ago with some friends, and we went to Notre Dame. And my partner and I had been to Paris, to Notre Dame before, and I was trying to work out how long ago it had been. So I thought, well, I've probably got a photo of that. So I opened image and I typed in Notre Dame, and it found a photo I'd taken last time I was there, and I could see when it was.
That's brilliant.
And then it gave me a load of other churches and cathedrals and stuff that looked a bit like it could be Notre Dame, but it had actually worked out, yes, Notre Dame looks like this, and this is a picture of it.
It wasn't based on the EXIF tags that would have had your GPS location in.
It could have been. I mean, I don't do that when I can't remember at the time, but I don't have that on to capture that on my photos.
Okay. So not that.
I mean, I may not have 15 years ago, granted, but these days that's not my practice.
Right.
But yes.
That's rather cool.
So I find this very interesting about the face recognition, or rather the person recognition, because I have deliberately kept my photographs out of platforms that can do that for you, because I've always worried about, well, is there going to be any deep data seepage? Who else or what else has got access to this, like facial recognition information? And this was why I was looking at image as well, because I thought, I've seen Alan show me these clever things where he says, like, you know, cat holding a blue ball, and you just get photos of cats holding a blue ball. So I wanted to have those facilities, and that's what I was looking at Image for. Was that a driver for you setting up Image?
It wasn't primarily that. The other thing that it does, which I really wanted, is it does a daily memories thing where it will show you today, a year ago, 2 years ago, whatever it's got photos for. So particularly the fact that most of my photos are of my daughter from the last 5 years, we can go back and say, oh, how did she look a year ago, 2 years ago when she was a baby? And that's fun for us and fun for her.
Yeah, that's cool.
One interesting thing is that some of this stopped working a few weeks ago. We opened it up and it's like, oh, it's not showing that. And also it's not actually indexed anything. Stuff's going into Nextcloud, but it's not being indexed. And then I went to have a look again today before I spoke about this, because I thought maybe I should try and fix that. And it was fixed. And I think this is part of my slightly funny Docker setup, where I've basically got a script which runs Docker Compose up once a week to pull the latest containers that have been published and restart them all. And occasionally I get things like this where it will pull a new version and something will be broken. And then I'll be like, oh, right, I'll get round to that. And then by the time I get round to it, it's already, there's already been a new version published.
And so you had a broken version of Image for a period of time and now it's fixed again.
Yeah. So yes, I'm pleased in hindsight that I set all that up.